This is a special edition of Sound Ideas, bringing you a debate between the candidates for the Illinois House in the 88th District. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The election is now less than 3 weeks away. Joining us you at the Illinois State University Alumni Center are the candidates, incumbent Republican Representative Keith Sommer and challenger Democrat Jill Blair. Also joining us for this live broadcast is our audience. Thanks to everyone for attending this forum. This debate will feature questions developed by GLT News with public input from those submitted at WGLT.org. There will also be time for opening and closing statements and for responses by the opposing candidates. This forum is co-sponsored by the McLean County League of Women Voters. The League's Sally Rudolph and Janine Toth are serving as our timekeepers this evening. We determine the order by drawing numbers with the lowest number going first and after that rotating among candidates. We will ask as many questions as time permits during this forum. Because this is live radio with a hard end time, candidates may have an abbreviated but equal amount of time to answer the last question. As moderator, I may call on candidates to make clarifying comments and pose follow-up questions as needed. That brings us to our opening statements by Keith Sommer, who drew the lowest number. You, sir, have 2 minutes for your opener.
Thank you, Charlie. Good evening. I'm Keith Sommer. I'd like to tell you a bit about myself for those of you who don't know me well. Born and raised in Morton, I took my BA degree in government from the University of Virginia. After graduation, I served as a VISTA volunteer in Cajun Country of Louisiana, working with the Area Community Action Agency in President Johnson's War on Poverty. I later worked with the Council on the Development of French in Louisiana and helped place young French nationals as teachers throughout the state to bring back its French language and culture so celebrated in Louisiana. It was a dream job working with so many French officials because during my college years, I had studied for a year at the University of Bordeaux. Answering my brother's call, I returned to Morton and ran his successful campaign for the Illinois State Senate, where he served with Senators Harper Hall and John Maitland. The political bug soon bit me too, and I subsequently served on the Morton Village Board, the Tazewell County Board, the Tri-County Regional Planning Commission, as Tazewell County Recorder, and currently as State Representative. My profession, I am a real estate broker. My wife, Deb, and I have been married 30 years and have two daughters, Kristen and Megan, who are students at the University of Illinois. Deb's career is a speech-language pathologist, working extensively with severely and profoundly disabled children, has helped me better understand their needs and those of other children's children. As an adoptive parent, it has been my pleasure to work on reforming adoption laws in Illinois, making adoption easier and more affordable. Currently, I continue to work on legislation benefiting dyslexic children so that they, too, receive the full measure of education they deserve. In the Illinois House, I am a member of the Insurance Committee, dealing with property and casualty legislation, which is of particular interest to our local insurance companies. As time winds down here, I'll cut my remarks a bit. I also serve as Republican spokesman in the International Trade and Commerce Committee, where trade policy task force are currently underway. These are most important to our farmers in the agriculture community around us and many others. That's a bit about me. I look forward to sharing thoughts with you this evening.
And Jill Blair, your opening statement.
Good evening. Thank you to WGLT, the League of Women Voters, the ISU Alumni Center for hosting us tonight, and thanks to all of you for being here. I'm happy to be here to talk to you about important issues facing our community. Back in 2015, our representatives in Springfield failed to pass an annual budget, and they made the same mistake again in 2016. The result was disastrous. It meant our schools and colleges struggled to pay their teachers and staff. We didn't know if our schools would open on time or if there would be bus service when they did. Poorer college students who relied on grants to pay their tuition didn't get their money, and some had to drop out of school. Parents who got help from the state to pay for daycare were left in the lurch, and important services for individuals with disabilities, senior citizens, people dealing with homelessness, addiction, and other challenges were cut or eliminated. My background is in education. I spent 12 years at Heartland Community College working with immigrant adults learning English and with others who had dropped out of high school working toward their GED certificates. So when the budget crisis hit, I personally knew the people who were being most affected. I got into education because I knew it was the key to economic stability and personal pride for those living on the margins. The budget crisis was devastating for so many who were on that path to pride and stability. When I first started thinking about how I might change things in Springfield, I was shocked to learn that our current representative has been in office for almost 20 years. If we weren't happy with our state government, why would we continue to send the same representative? And then I discovered that he'd actually run unopposed for the last 10 years, and to me, that's just not democracy. I'm running to represent the 88th District in the Illinois House because we deserve better than what Springfield has delivered. I'm running because the voters of this district deserve to have choices on the ballot. I'm running because when politicians run unopposed, we don't have forums like this, and we don't ask hard questions. We deserve answers to the hard questions. We deserve a true democracy. We deserve a functioning state government that puts the needs of people above partisan politics. I'm Jill Blair, and I'm ready to work for the Illinois we deserve, an Illinois we can be proud to call home.
You're listening to a special Sound Ideas and an 88th District State House debate live from the ISU Alumni Center. Ideas for questions for tonight's forum were submitted at WGLT.org. As agreed, each candidate will have up to 90 seconds to answer questions with 1 minute response times if desired, after each candidate has had an opportunity to answer the initial question. Follow-up questions from me carry a 1 minute time limit. State spending has grown at a faster rate than state revenue since 1994. Even after the tax increase passed, there remained a structural deficit baked into our needs for spending on pensions. When the tax increase expired, that ballooned. Medicaid, K-12 education, and other mandated or highly desirable spending was left in the lurch. How should the state fix the existing structural deficit? What proportion or mix of funding do you find preferable? Jill Blair, you are first.
The first thing I would propose is going to a progressive income tax. In 1970, when we wrote the flat tax into our Constitution, CEOs made about 20 times the average worker's salary. And today, that's more like 300 times. Between 1947 and 1979, increases in income were spread evenly across all income levels. But since 1979, all increases in income have gone to the top 10%. So a flat tax system is failing us. We need folks who make $300,000 or more per year to pay their fair share in taxes to help us find that revenue we need to balance our budget and to restore funding for K-12 schools, higher education, and social services.
And Keith Sommer.
How do we fix a deficit? We certainly need greater discipline in our spending. Passing multiple unbalanced budgets over the years. Let me tell you a story about a similar forum like this some years ago. It was June after the session had completed, yet it seemed that $700 million more were available to the state of Illinois. The question posed was, how do you propose spending that money? Those present had various answers. My answer was, we passed our budget, why not save it? It was in that era where we were talking about rainy day funds. Why don't we take the surplus we have, just as we do as individuals in our own households, and save it for those rainy days when we need it? Unfortunately, my advice was not followed, and all that money was spent. Real growth in revenue is the answer. Through job growth. We need to make this a destination state for job providers and entrepreneurs. That's how we grow government and government services, not through new taxes. Taxes take away the incentive to grow.
1 minute response times are available, starting with Jill Blair.
I'd agree that when we do have a budget surplus, it's the right thing to set some aside for an emergency that might come up in the future. We haven't had a budget surplus in quite a long time, so that's a great idea. But going forward, we need to talk about real-life solutions that are going to make a difference in the coming years.
And Keith Sommer?
Regarding the graduated tax, we've not seen any proposed figures as to whom that might impact. I think it may be surprising to some of us that levels much below 300,000 would be affected. So I'm very hesitant at this time to support any such measure.
And how do you think the public pension underfunding issue should be addressed? That's an issue that has been decades in development by numerous governors and numerous general assemblies. We'll start with Keith Sommer.
One thing we can do is look at reamortization of that debt. It was established through a ramp from 45 years to back in the 90s. Even area Democrats have recently said that they favor a look at reamortization. What we have is a system, a ramp by which it's backloaded. When it was passed by the General Assembly, the amount every year was not so high. And that's why legislators voted for it. They thought, that's not too bad. But if you look farther down the road, in 20, 30, 45 years, those payments would be significant. We need to look at that reamortization. Lump sum buyouts are currently being offered, should continue to be offered. And we also need to look at our defined benefit plans. Can we afford those? Are employee-controlled plans the way of the future as it is in the private sector?
So Jill Blair, your turn.
This is one area where I think my opponent and I agree. We definitely need to talk about reamortizing that debt. We need to do three things. Reamortize the pension debt and abandon that 1995 pension ramp. We need to regularly review and adjust our assumptions about investment returns. And we need to regularly review and adjust the actuarial tables that the pensions are based on, because people are living longer, we're paying out more in benefits. I'd also like to point out that our pension debt, it's a serious problem we need to talk about, but it is attributable in most part due to the skipped payments and due to bad investment assumptions. Only 4% of our pension debt is attributable to increasing benefits. So talking about taking benefits away from workers who have earned those pensions is not something I even want to consider.
And I'm going to ask a follow-up on this one. You've both come up with a couple of ideas here on ways to address the pension underfunding. There are other possible policy tools out there that have been mentioned over the years. There's a proposal to issue bonds to make up the unfunded amount, with the idea that some of the returns on the investments made will pay for the interest and principal, a refinance, if you will. There's a proposal to tax financial transactions at the commodities and other trading exchanges in Chicago. There's still the consideration model out there offering current workers the option of giving up health coverage when they retire in return for pay increases while they're working, and an end to pay increases while they're working if they choose to keep their health insurance after retirement. What do you think of those particular pension items? And since that's a follow-up, we'll start with Keith.
Well, that's quite a long list, Charlie. I voted against that pension plan that supposedly gave retirees and active annuitants an option, because I thought it was unconstitutional. The Supreme Court agreed with me. As we move forward, we need to have the stakeholders involved. Not just the legislature, but those who rely on pensions, who've been promised pensions. Everyone needs to be involved in this discussion.
And Jill?
I agree that stakeholders need to be involved in the discussion. We've had this problem for over a decade, probably a couple of decades, so why haven't the stakeholders been brought to the table before now? As far as a LaSalle Street tax, that's something I am open to considering. Same thing with issuing of bonds. We need to solve this problem by paying what's required into the system now, and instead of ramping up payments over time, let's pay more into the system now so we can actually ramp those payments down, a realistic system that gives us a sense of what's to come in the future.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas and a debate between the candidates for the 88th State House seat, challenger Jill Blair and incumbent Representative Keith Sommer. A new question now, 90 seconds. We've touched on pensions, which currently make up 26% of state spending. Close behind at 23% is Medicaid funding. There's a strong argument that that level and the growth trends of low-income people in the state make the Medicaid amount unsustainable to our current current structure of spending and revenue. How should Illinois leaders lead on this issue and reduce the growth rate of Medicaid spending in the near and long term, or alternatively, fund that growth rate? And we'll start with Jill Blair.
Over 3 million Illinoisans are receiving Medicaid at this point, 324,000 children. So one in four Illinoisans are in Medicaid. We can talk about making cuts to Medicaid, but where are those folks going to go for their health care? That doesn't stop them from getting sick, from having illnesses, needing emergency care. We're going to pay for that care one way or the other, either an emergency room or prompt care. The Medicaid expansion has actually helped bring some people into the health care system. It's brought stabilization to our health care systems, particularly in rural areas, where hospitals and health care providers tend to be a major employer. The expansion of Medicaid has brought them some stability that they didn't have before. So Medicaid is not something I'm interested in talking about cutting. If anything, I want to see a public option, a public Medicaid buy-in for everybody to buy Medicaid if they want to compete alongside private insurers.
And Keith Sommer?
I agree that Medicaid is essential to many in our state. Though we've made efforts to review for fraud, those really haven't turned up the figures that some anticipated. Enrollment is up, certainly. I think sometimes it's unfair that the general public looks at Medicaid and thinks of those who are not willing to work. That's not true. When you look at the people who are on Medicaid, we're going to have a growing population because so many of the elderly are on Medicaid. Your resources eventually run out, and then the state takes over. And as I heard this morning on the news, life expectancy in the United States has jumped up a bit this year. So it's only going to grow. We certainly need to continue to work on trying to increase our federal match. We're at 50-50. Some states are better, higher, maybe 60%. Why Illinois hasn't attained that, I'm not sure. We need to continue to work on that. Job growth would be a big help because we need jobs for those and people who are perhaps on Medicaid, young families. Good jobs, a good economy in the state of Illinois will provide the revenue for them that they need and help them and their children.
And let's go with one-minute responses. Jill?
As far as job growth goes, of course we want to attract employers to Illinois, but we're at a pretty low unemployment rate at this point. 60% of all Medicaid recipients can't work, and 64% of adults who are receiving Medicaid are working. So we need to talk about the quality of jobs that we have in Illinois. We need to make sure that they're paying a living wage and that they're offering benefits like health care to their employees. We can't let corporations allow their employees to become dependent on public aid. If you're working a full-time job, you deserve fair pay and benefits.
And Keith, you have a one-minute response.
We certainly need to do more in job growth for particularly our young people. And that really goes hand in hand with education. If you don't have the education, you don't have the job growth, you don't have the job opportunities. So many employers I talk to who have good jobs available say they're having difficulty filling them for various reasons. One of those is preparation academically. So any effort we can make in that arena would be positive.
Okay. Put on your philosophical hats here. Some candidates believe in an active role for state government, interceding between the haves and the have-nots. Others believe in a restrained role, that government should get out of the way of most people's lives. Please tell us where you believe state government should be active, where not. Tax policy, social policy, health care, the environment, business, constituent service, and so on. What's your philosophy of government and how the holder of this particular office should work? And let's start with Keith.
I represent a diverse population in a diverse district, and I'm glad that I was redrawn into this portion of McLean County. It kind of has given me better perspective on the needs of the citizens of Illinois. Previously, my districts have been small town, rural, people who believed in self-sufficiency and get out of our way, government get out of our way, just do the basics and let us live our lives, let us grow our businesses. But on the other hand, there are others who need more services from state government. And I've seen that here in this part of the county, West Bloomington, which my district includes, and has opened my eyes to the needs of the people there. Certainly we need to provide basic services, but we can't deny the needs that people have through no fault of their own. Much of our constituent work is trying to help these people navigate their problems through state government and state government programs. We certainly need to let people live their own lives, but we certainly need to let people have the benefits due them, too.
Jill.
You know, we have a history in this country of electing people who claim that government is never the answer, that government doesn't have solutions, that government can't work. And then we elect those people who prove that point out. I consider myself a Democrat for a very specific reason. I believe that government can and should play a positive role in the lives of its citizens. I believe that government should be making lives easier for the people who live in this community, in this country. And that includes, you know, everything that you mentioned, social services, education, K-12, but also a hand up when things are going wrong, when the bottom falls out and you didn't expect it. We need a strong social safety net to stop people from slipping through the cracks.
And we have an opportunity for expansions or redirects there. Keith, do you want that time?
I don't believe so.
And Jill? Okay. That's the first time that's happened. Okay. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're in an 88th District State House debate at the ISU University Galleries. Nope. Keith, not the ISU University Galleries. My old tape there, the ISU Alumni Center. Keith, you voted with Governor Rauner for a couple of years. Jill, you are going to be a freshman if you're elected and beholden to the Speaker of the House, who is famously authoritative over his members. So how, both of you, will you exercise independence and put your district's best interests at heart if the voters should choose you? And let's go with Jill first.
I'm going to start by rejecting the premise of your question. I am not beholden to Speaker Madigan. I am beholden to the voters of the 88th District. I have not taken money from the Democratic Party of Illinois. I am running a very independent grassroots campaign because I'm motivated to represent the people of this district. That said, I am a Democrat, and if I find areas of agreement with the Speaker because we share party and we share philosophies, that's not the same thing as being beholden to him. I'm interested in serving the people of this district as best I can.
Keith.
Well, I certainly will not be voting for Speaker Madigan to continue his reign in Springfield. It's been far too long. On the other hand, I do not follow what anyone else tells me to do. I look at the issues. I hear positions. And I vote accordingly. I think of the people back home. I think of the people I represent. Having had the opportunity to work in local government, I think I have that perspective by which I look at things and say, well, how does that impact local government and the services they provide? How does that impact county government? So you might say that I vote perhaps more with the conservative Republican side than with Mr. Madigan, and that would be accurate. But if you have an argument that you would like to present to me, I fully am open to discussion. I want your input. I want to know what you think. And by that way, I can make my best decisions.
Do either of you want extra time on that issue?
I'd like to take a
go ahead.
Moment. As far as whether Representative Sommer has been open to the input of his constituents, I'm looking at faces in the crowd right here today that I know have expressed to me frustration with trying to ask Representative Sommer to consider their positions and to consider their input, and they did not feel like they were heard. That's part of the reason why I've decided to step forward and run.
And Keith.
Well, I don't think that's accurate. I'm open to all. My door is open. I don't believe I've had anyone in this audience come to my office and ask to speak to me. I'd be happy to stay later this evening and talk with you if you have an issue that we've not addressed.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're at the Illinois State University Alumni Center with Keith Sommer and Jill Blair, candidates for the State House in the 88th District. This forum is co-sponsored by GLT and the McLean County League of Women Voters. Small businesses account for much of the economic activity in the state, yet large businesses tend to get the oxygen by development folks and lawmakers. What do you think needs to be done to spark small business development in Illinois? And Keith, you are first on this question.
You're right, Charlie. Unfortunately, the big whale seems to get the grease, and it's the small business owner that is the energy of all our communities. Our overall job climate must be good. Big businesses, though, need small businesses. They need suppliers. They need all services in our communities. Small businesses also need fewer regulations and fees and laws. Not just on the state level, but on the local and county level. Let me cite a type of thing that I hope we would stop in Springfield, the introduction and passage of laws that make it difficult for the person starting. There's a roofing bill that's been tossed around for a couple of years that said that if you were a business individual, owned a commercial business, you could not have your employees repair your own roof. Makes no sense, even if your employees have a background in doing that. Just imagine the successful enterprises that started out of a garage, yet we have legislation proposed that says, I'm sorry, whether you're Hewlett-Packard or whoever you were, you cannot on your own fix your roof. That's ludicrous.
Jill Blair, small business stimulation.
I agree 100%. One of the things that we're dealing with is people leaving the state of Illinois. The way that we can stimulate growth among small businesses and stimulate entrepreneurship is to make sure, number one, that we have an educated workforce. We need to start investing in our K-12 schools and our institutions of higher education. We need to invest in small business development centers instead of giving big tax breaks to major corporations and trying to lure them in to Illinois. We need to invest in the people who are from Illinois. We need to make sure that the folks who are starting businesses in their own communities where they want to raise their children, where they were raised themselves, that they can do so. And they will be the engine of economic growth now and into the future if we invest in them properly.
And enlargement or redirection. Keith?
Well, I think we need to continue to encourage training of employees. Whether your business is medium-sized or very small, and the state needs to continue to work through its Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity to encourage our business sector, our chambers of commerce, to see that those who are putting their livelihood on the line and trying to start a business get guidance. And whatever we can do in the state level to do that for the small provider is what we should do. We should no longer toss those huge incentives out there to corporations who sometimes just disappear. Namely, Sears. Sears was given some money years back, and now they're leaving. It would be more better spent with a local small business.
And Jill, you have a minute.
One thing I'd like to add is imagine if we had a public health care option in the state of Illinois where folks could buy their health insurance directly from the state. what that would free up in terms of people who might be willing to leave their full-time regular jobs to start a small business, who might be willing to invest more of their time and energy into small businesses that they've already started. A lot of people feel tied to their regular everyday jobs because that's where they're getting their health care. That's where they're getting their benefits from. If we had something available to folks who wanted to start their small businesses so they didn't rely on their employer for health care, I think that would be a great stimulus.
Thank you both. State funding of higher education at Illinois State University has dropped from 35% of the overall budget in 2002 to about 15% today. That's not uncommon for all of the state's public universities in seeing that decline in state support. Except for ownership of land and buildings and pensions, that's approaching privatization. And privatization is something that Republican State Senator Bill Brady has proposed. What is your ideal aspirational ratio of state support for higher education as a societal good? Is it privatization? Is it 100%? Where do you draw that line? And then the corollary is what's practically achievable. And Jill Blair, you start.
First, we need to start by reinvesting in higher education. We've essentially divested from the higher ed system in Illinois. There's less appropriated for higher ed now than there was in FY03. The level is slightly decreasing since FY12. We're finally seeing things restored, but as my colleague Ben Webb said last week, we're not going to celebrate a 2% increase when we've been cut over the years. So we need to invest in higher ed. We need to make it possible for students, our talented young people, to stay here and get their higher education degrees close to home. We're seeing so many students that are choosing to go out of state because of the instability that we've experienced over the last few years. They're not sure if the university is going to make it. They're not sure if the program they want to enroll in is going to be funded for their full 4 years. So by reinvesting in education and making those institutions of higher learning places that our local kids want to go so that they stay here in Illinois and give back to their home states, I think that's has to be a number one priority. I'm encouraged to see what University of Illinois announced a few weeks ago, where they're going to offer tuition-free opportunities for lower income or from students from lower income families. I'd like to see more of that.
And Keith, how should government fund higher education, if at all?
You toss a lot of things out there, Charlie. You asked about a ratio, and I'm really not sure where we're going to go with that. We have a task force now working on funding and other issues with our state universities. Locally, Representative Dan Brady is working on that and doing a great job, along with Senator Chapin Rose. Which we have to make sure that whatever funding formula we come up with for our universities, similar to what we've just recently done with K-12, is fair. It seems sometimes we punish those who are most competent. We see success and figure, well, you don't need funding. You've been successful. Illinois State has had success in recent years. Its enrollment is strong. The work done by Presidents Al Bowman and Larry Dietz have been extraordinary. Their efforts outside the community in getting endowments and funding for the university should be complimented. I look forward to working with Larry Dietz and all those who are in the post-secondary education. One thing that Joe mentioned was students leaving the state. When my daughters were in college, made the tours of colleges, it was amazing what other states were offering to our students. But if I get a rebuttal or something here, I will have another comment.
And you do indeed. Jill, you're first on the extra minute.
I was struck by Representative Summers saying he looks forward to working with President Dietz. I would hope that he has been working with President Dietz and administrators from other colleges and universities in or nearby the district. I have personally met with President Dietz since I decided that I was going to run. And one thing I agree with Representative Dan Brady and what Keith Summers just said, that we need to talk about a funding formula for higher education to make it a fairer system so that it's not such a political system.
And Keith, you get to continue your thought there.
Of course, Larry Dietz and I are not strangers. We see each other quite often. Larry is very active along with the rest of the administration in not just this area, but coming to Springfield and addressing issues. Back to what we can offer our students to keep them in state. When my second daughter was looking at institutions, we made a visit to ISU. And I was pleasantly surprised, and I hope that this is more publicized, that Illinois State offers competitive packages to students with good grades, good test scores, in line with those other states poaching our students. Perhaps that's why the enrollment here is so strong. The university recognizes that these top students, we need them because the chances are they're going to be here 4 years. And we need students to continue their education throughout those 4 years of college.
Here's a one-minute follow-up. One of the strands of thought among the higher ed working group is that, okay, state resources are going to be limited for higher education no matter what. So universities, public universities, can't be all things to all people. So we need to do a better job of prioritizing and getting each university to specialize in its own area. Cutting against that is a strand of thought that said universities are engines of economic development, and they feed the region in which they're located. So cutting any particular program is bad for the region in which it's located. Where do you fall on that spectrum of developing priorities for the state's limited dollars for higher ed? And that's a one-minute follow-up, so we'll start with Jill again.
I think it should be up to each university which programs they're going to offer to meet the needs of their region and the needs of the students who are interested in coming there. You think about someone who lives in northern Illinois, and now all of a sudden there's not a program for, you know, teaching secondary school English. You've got to go to Southern Illinois University for that. That may not be feasible for folks who can't travel across the state, can't afford to live away from home. We need to have the programs available in the regions so that students have access to programs that they're looking for, and it should be up to each university to figure out which programs they want to offer.
And Keith, 1 minute on the question whether it's state money. Should the state get a say in setting priorities, or should it be local control by each public university?
Well, that was a bit of a restatement of the question, but I certainly believe that the economic engines that universities provide in their areas is so important. But one thing we also need to take into consideration is we've seen a tremendous expansion in programs offered by public and private universities over the last decades. And now we have a time where there are fewer students coming out of high school, and the enrollment at some institutions is not what it should be. Universities need to look at their offerings to their students. They can only offer so much and financially do that. Fortunately, Illinois State is one of those who has performed well, and I think will prosper.
Here's a fresh 90-second question. Scientists have been sounding the alarm on human-caused climate change for decades, from the burning of fossil fuels. Now comes a UN report suggesting that those scientists have been optimistic and that really there's very little chance to avoid a number of unwholesome effects from climate change. If those things can be avoided, it would, according to the UN report, require a more significant and rapid reshaping of society and the world economy than has happened in history. Such an effort would require participation at all levels of government, including the state level of government. Quite apart from what Congress does, should Illinois do anything about this? And if so, what and how fast? And I believe we'll start with Keith.
I'm not sure what involvement the state can have with climate change, though we certainly aren't concerned with our environment. Perhaps the overpopulation of our coasts, if those who project what may happen to water levels may not have been the smartest move in some states. I certainly support renewable energy efforts in Illinois, our wind, and we currently have a lot of solar projects being proposed up for bid. We need those kind of renewable energies as opposed to fossil fuel. I think we'll make progress with new vehicles. There are those who say over the next few decades, the way we motor our vehicles will change drastically. In the area of waste disposal, That should be of concern to all of us. Does it have an effect on the environment? Certainly. Does it affect global warming? Perhaps, because some units of government and some countries incinerate their product. Is that a wise thing to do? Is that an alternative to the landfills we no longer have available in McLean County? Or is that something contrary to the environment and would promote global warming? Those are things we really need to look at.
Jill Blair.
This is another area where I can point to the fact that I'm a Democrat. I choose to identify with this party because this is the party that has acknowledged that global warming and global climate change is a true and serious problem. The time for debate about whether it's real, whether it's happening, how is it being caused, is over. We now need to think about real solutions, creative solutions, innovative solutions to solving those problems. I'm happy to see things like solar farms and wind farms going up in our area, but one of the things we need to do as a state, as a nation, is hold the largest polluters accountable for what they're doing. I drive a hybrid car. I know a lot of people that do. I know folks who are installing solar panels on their roofs. We can all make all the differences in our everyday lives, but without holding the corporations accountable who have the most influence on pollution, we can't do it alone. So that's one area where I think the state could have an effect.
Keith, do you want an extra minute?
I think we've covered it.
And Jill? Okay. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, and a debate among the two candidates for State House in the 88th District, Representative Keith Sommer, a Republican, and Democrat Jill Blair, who are contending November 6th. Some education leaders suggest that traditional high school experience is going to undergo a significant shift over the next several years as workforce development initiatives take kids in increasing numbers out of the classroom and put them in the community in various settings for something that might resemble apprenticeships or tracking into skilled trades and business needs. Do you embrace or reject this vision, and how should the legislature help accomplish or respond to it? And I believe, Jill Blair, you're first.
I'd love to see that kind of innovation in our high schools and in our junior highs. Kids should be exposed to all kinds of opportunities, not just in terms of what they're going to do to earn a paycheck, but what they can do to enrich their lives. I've had the opportunity to visit some local apprenticeship programs that are offered through union labor, and that's something that they've been getting right for a long time. The unions know how to bring folks on. They ask for their members to invest in those that are coming after them so that they can get trained up and become full journeymen in the trade that they've chosen. I'd love to see partnerships between the high schools and the community colleges with the union labor organizations to give kids those opportunities to see what else is out there for them.
Keith.
I can't disagree at all with what Jill said. Our high schools will change. They should change. We do have those programs where students, at least in my hometown high school, leave campus and go to internships and work a part of the day and then go back to school. But also we have wonderful programs in McLean County. Livingston High School's Career Center is outstanding. The preparation they do for students in various trades and jobs is fantastic. And I salute Tom Frazier and all those at Livingston High who work on that, as well as Unit 5 has a wonderful program for thinking ahead and educating students as to what job opportunities are for the future. Jill mentioned community colleges. It's interesting. I think our high schools maybe should become more like community colleges, a greater offering of courses, kind of restructuring the day, also offering the opportunity not just for students to leave campus, but to have knowledgeable people come into the schools and talk to them. The operating engineers in my area asked to do that in one of our high schools. I think more of our professions and trades need to have that opportunity to not just welcome them on their ground, but to enter our schools and not just be there for a semester or a mini semester a week, but maybe just a day at a time to talk to students. And we have assemblies. Let's take the opportunity to educate kids as what is available. Sometimes we assume they know. They really don't.
Okay. 1 minute responses. Jill.
One thing I'd just like to add to my response is as we're reintroducing these opportunities, number one, that's going to cost money. If we're going to build labs and things in our schools, we want to make sure that they're state of the art. We need to invest in them. And number two, we need to be careful about returning to the old days of tracking where, oh, you're an A student, so you're going to get to take calculus. You're a C student, you go take shop. It shouldn't be that way, that there are lots of great, smart people that work in the trades, and we need to have those opportunities available for all kids.
Keith, an extra minute for you.
Certainly we need to disavow that notion that certain students are suited for certain trades and certain jobs and certain advanced education. We went through a period here where school programs that had shops and other training like that were closed. And students were told, oh, you all have to go to college. We know that's no longer the case, that that really is not productive, that students have their own minds and their own desires. And we need to let them follow their passion and their interest. And I hope schools will continue to expand their programs on site for things like auto mechanics and welding. Welding is a profession that is in great, great demand.
Here's a one-minute follow-up. I'd invite you to consider the effect of this shift in the traditional high school experience on the recently passed school funding formula, which is based on traditional butts in seats kind of thing. If the kids are no longer in seats but are out in apprenticeship programs that are being generally overseen, how would you envision that affecting the funding formula? And Jill, go ahead.
I think I'd argue that the new funding formula is not about butts in seats. There's like 27 different factors that are taken into consideration to determine what the funding is going to be for each student. And absolutely, we need to reimagine what the classroom is. It's not just about these 30 seats in this one room. The world is our classroom. We need to get out into it. But again, that's going to continue. It's going to require us to continue to invest in education, which is something we've failed to do for many, many years. I'm glad to see the new funding formula in place. We need to make sure we're sticking to it and allocating funds appropriately.
Keith.
The K through 12 funding formula is a wonderful example of legislators working together. We haven't had a good record of doing that in recent years. I think any glitches that we might experience when we try to expose students off campus can be worked on with the funding formula. It's incumbent upon us, though, to follow through on the funding formula. Yes, we've started this first year. We have held harmless those schools that essentially are deemed not to need assistance. But there are also many other factors that need to be considered in that. State school mandates is a huge topic which cannot be disregarded as we talk about this.
This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media. Nationwide buying power of the gas tax has fallen sharply after inflation. State motor fuel tax funding to cities and counties has fallen as those revenues have eroded. McLean County has suggested the state allow a county-level motor fuel tax to allow a better local road repair. How do you see the pros and cons of this issue? And Keith, you're first on that.
Well, you're correct, Charlie. Everyone knows that with the hybrid vehicles and electric vehicles that lesser amounts of oil are consumed and gasoline, and therefore some of the revenues are not what they used to be. Sorry, I lost my train of thought here a second.
Local taxing authority.
The local initiative and the county level. I think those kind of things should be allowed if that's the choice of the community. I don't think Illinois at the state level should always dictate what our local citizens want. If that's an approach that you in this community or in this county want, that should be considered.
And Jill.
The motor fuel tax, if I'm correct, hasn't been increased in a decade or more. And over the summer, I attended a legislators forum where my opponent argued that we shouldn't raise the motor fuel tax because no one is buying fuel-efficient cars. To me, that's actually a reason to increase the motor fuel tax, to encourage people to buy smaller, more fuel-efficient cars. The issue is, as we look forward and people are driving more fuel-efficient cars or we have more ride-share, self-driving cars, electric cars. Those cars weigh the same amount as a traditional car. They're doing the same damage to the road. So we do need to be careful about continually raising the motor fuel tax and gas taxes because eventually, if people are behaving correctly and doing the right things, we're going to be spending less and less on gas and getting less revenue from that. So we do need to think about creative ways going forward to fund infrastructure projects.
1 minute response times. Keith.
Well, I think one thing we do not need is a mileage tax. It's been bandied about in this election year. I don't know what the actual words were said about it, but that would really be a negative for those of us who need to be on the road more than a few miles every day to get to our jobs and actually do our jobs. That would be a very destructive to our business climate. So I would not support a mileage tax. And we certainly need to look at our infrastructure and how that's funded, our roads and our other highways. And I think those discussions will begin again this spring in Springfield. And welcome everyone's input.
And Jill, your turn.
I don't have these numbers in front of me, but I know it's been a while since we've had a capital funding project. We don't have the revenue to allow for that right now. I'm concerned about this notion that we can't consider a mileage tax when the more you drive, the more damage you're doing to the roads and the infrastructure. The more your car is on that road, it seems like those should be the folks who are paying to maintain the roads more than someone who's, you know, driving back and forth a couple of miles to work. So it's not something that I'm proposing right now. We need to implement this program XYZ, but it's certainly something we shouldn't take off the table as we think about where we're going in the future.
This is an 88th State House District candidates debate. Jill Blair is a Democrat. Keith Sommer is a Republican. They are contending for this position in the November 6th election. One of the critiques of both major parties is that whenever they control the redistricting process, they create safe seats. How do you feel about partisan control over redistricting? And I believe that Jill is the first to start on that.
I believe that our map should be drawn by an independent commission. Representatives shouldn't be picking their voters. It should be the other way around. Voters pick their representatives. This is probably an area where I disagree with leadership in my own party. What we hear a lot about is term limits. A lot of voters will ask about that. That's a question I get asked a lot. I don't think that term limits are the answer to longtime incumbency. What would have happened, for example, if my opponent had termed out in this district that, you know, has been safely Republican for quite some time, is my guess is that he would have been able to handpick his successor, or the Republican Party would have been able to handpick his successor. Fairer maps, campaign finance reform, making it easier for third party and independent candidates to get on the ballot. I think that's the way we address this, is through democracy, making sure that we have choices on the ballot every time and that elections are competitive, that we're holding each other accountable.
And Keith.
Jill, I agree with you. I've supported both efforts at fair maps in recent years and been greatly disappointed that the Supreme Court showed its politics and ruled them out of order. We need an independent entity that draws districts. It should be taken out of the hands of legislators. And I think having such a map program, the way we draw our districts, would lessen the entrenchment of power that we have in a few individuals in Springfield. Regarding term limits, I certainly believe that we should limit the terms of our legislative leaders, whether it's the Speaker or the President or the minority and leaders. I think they should be less than 10 years. Some have said 10 years. I think less than 10. Beyond that, if the popular vote is put to the people, I will abide by the wishes, and I would support term limits.
And 1 minute additions, Jill?
I'm just a little confused by that answer from someone who's served in Springfield for 20 years. You've had the opportunity to limit your terms yourself by choosing not to run. You haven't had an opponent in 10 years. That needs to change. And my line of on that won't change when I'm serving in Springfield. I need to be held accountable as well. It's not a democracy if we don't have choices on the ballot and if people can stay in their positions for decades without challenge.
Keith.
I say Speaker Madigan's been there how long? 50 years? Not quite. 47. Term limits. Some have asked who else should be under term limits. I went to college in Virginia. The state of Virginia at that time limited their governors to one term. And you know what? They still do. And Virginia has survived and is financially among the top 10 or 12 in the country. What are we missing here? Maybe we should limit our governor to one term. That way they wouldn't be campaigning all the time, raising money and making decisions based on, well, will that get me more votes or less votes? Give them 4 years. Let them do what they want to do, and then find somebody else.
And that response brings us to the end of the question period of the forum and 2 minute closing statements. Jill Blair, you went second for opening statements. You can lead off for closings.
Thank you, Charlie. I want to again thank WGLT, the League of Women Voters, and Illinois State University for hosting us, and I applaud all of you in attendance, as well as those listening at home or on the podcast, for participating in your democracy. For the first time in a long time, we're going to have choices on the ballot for state and county level races, and I'm excited to see so many people interacting with candidates and challenging us to answer your questions. I cannot represent you well if I haven't taken the opportunity to know you. I am a lifelong Illinoisan and a product of our public schools. I've earned degrees from two of our outstanding public universities, including Illinois State. I've spent the last year getting to know the people of this district better, and one thing is very clear. People are frustrated with Illinois politics and disappointed with Springfield. Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, Independents, people are fed up. I recognize we are facing many challenges, structural budget deficits, mounting debt, partisan gridlock. But my good friend David Parker, who's running for McLean County Board, always says, when things get tough, you can choose to pick up and leave, or you can choose to stay and fight. Like David, I choose to stay and fight for Illinois. I choose to fight for fairer taxes for middle and working class families. I choose to fight for the children of Illinois so that each of them has access to a quality education. I choose to fight for our colleges and universities so that our talented young people have some place to pursue higher education close to home. I choose to fight for senior citizens and people with disabilities so they have access to the services they need to live happy and safe lives of dignity. I choose to fight for a functioning state government built on a true democracy because we're better off when we have choices. I choose to fight for a better Illinois because this is my home. My name is Jill Blair, and I need your vote on November 6th to bring meaningful change to Springfield.
And State Representative Keith Sommer, your turn for closing remarks.
Thank you, Charlie. I'm pleased that on some issues this evening, Jill and I have agreed. It's kind of like in Springfield, we don't always agree, but we should find those things we have in common. In my prepared remarks, I would thank WGLT and particularly you, Charlie, along with WJBC and Pantograph and the TV stations that have joined us this evening, and for all of you present and for listening now or later on your rebroadcast. Though we've talked tonight about many challenges facing the state of Illinois, I am optimistic that by truly working together, we can turn these challenges into opportunities for the benefit of all. Illinois can indeed become a destination state where life is good. Too often, we dwell upon our differences and what divides us. We need to talk a great deal more about what we all have in common and what hopes and visions we share and then act to fulfill them. Tonight, as an election season enters its final weeks, I ask for your support and your vote to continue representing you, the good, hardworking people of McLean County and Central Illinois. I also ask for your prayers for all candidates on the ballot, for Jill, for me, for all of us, that we remain mindful that our calling is to serve others and not ourselves, and that civility and kindness reap untold promise. When the election is over and the dust settles, let the victors be not prideful nor boastful, but humble and understanding of the responsibilities bestowed upon them. To all of them, and to all of you this evening, Godspeed.
Thank you, candidates, for participating in this on-location edition of Sound Ideas, an 88th State House District Candidate Debate, co-sponsored with the McLean County League of Women Voters and GLT. Thanks to Illinois State University for providing the venue for this event at the ISU Alumni Center. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The election is November 6th. Go and vote. Early voting going on now. Thanks to you for attending and listening. This is WGLT Normal, a service of Illinois State University's School of Communication. Thank you.